Hey you guys, time for another Flickers of Fear, and again we're doing some more Italian giallo goodness, although this one has a little bit of a different vibe to it. It's interesting because I was watching like a kind of a selection of other reviews of this movie, because I always really kind of had an affection for it. You know, I will admit that it's not, you know, one of your top tier giallo movies. It's not required viewing, you know, if you want to get into the genre, but there's something about it that really kind of, I don't know, that really kind of resonates with me. But I see that in the horror community, and particularly people who are really into Italian horror, really into giallo movies in general, this one seems to be pretty divisive. Most people are kind of like, you know, yeah, it's a really good one because of some of the reasons that I'm going to get into. But then there's some, you know, there's a couple in particular that are really, really into giallo movies that really, really do not like this one very much at all, and kind of put it at the bottom of the barrel. As I said, it's not one of your essential giallo, you know, it's not essential giallo viewing by any means, but I don't know, there's something about it I like. I guess because it has like, it's not a straightforward giallo film in the sense that it has kind of like the mystery element to it like toward the end, but it also is kind of like an old school gothic film. Like, it has a lot of gothic trappings to it too, which I actually really enjoy. So it's almost kind of like, it almost kind of straddles the line between sort of your kind of earlier gothic movies, you know, like Mario Bava, something like Black Sunday or something like that, even though this isn't about witches and it's not supernatural, but it's kind of like the dividing line between those types of movies and kind of your more, you know, early 70s Dario Argento, you know, more classic giallo movies. This came out, in case I didn't mention, this is called The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave, which I love that fucking title. I love giallo titles in general, but I love that title so much. This came out in 1971, which was actually, I think, the same year that Dario Argento's Cat of Nine Tails came out. So it's, you know, the late 70s, early, or the late 60s, early 70s era, which is kind of like the heyday of the giallo movies. Once it was kind of getting to the mid to late 70s, you know, they were still being made. They were still being made into the 80s, but sort of the heyday of them had passed. Like, there was a shit ton of them made in the late 60s, early 70s. So this was, I kind of feel like this was made to sort of cash in on the trend, but then it still had all these kind of leftover gothic trappings to it too, which, like I said, I kind of like that, but your mileage may vary. Now, this is kind of like, the plot of this is kind of crazy and it's sort of convoluted. And I think the problem that a lot of people had with it mostly was that, one, you know, a lot of the plots, it was just like too off the wall, like it wouldn't have happened like that. But I think the main complaint that I've seen with it is that a lot of the characters, well, pretty much all of the characters, I'm gonna say right now, are unlikable, because all of the characters are pretty much terrible, which in a way I kind of feel like you could level that same criticism at something like, you know, Mario Bava's Bay of Blood, for example, where, you know, pretty much everyone is a terrible person who's just out to get something and will kill people, you know, to get what they want. So this is kind of like a similar sort of thing, but, you know, like I said, again, your mileage may vary. I really dig this movie, but if you don't, I can totally see that too. I feel like there's a bunch of different versions of this movie that are floating around. I believe the one that's supposedly the most, you know, what the director wanted, I guess, is a 103-minute version, which I'm pretty sure is the version that I've seen. Because there was one, there's a Blu-ray set, it's called Dangerous Dames or something like that. I have to, like, look it up. But it has this movie, and it also has the other giallo movie that was done by the same director, whose name is Emilio Moralia, which was called The Red Queen Kills Seven Times, which I'm also going to get around to eventually, too. A lot of people, like I said, that are into the giallo genre will say that of the two giallo movies that he made, like The Red Queen Kills Seven Times is the better one, but I haven't seen that one, so I'm not really, I mean, they are very thematically similar, so I've heard, but since I haven't seen Red Queen, I'm going to reserve judgment on that until I actually end up seeing it. So what we have in this movie, at the very beginning, our main character is a dude named Lord Alan Cunningham, who is kind of like your just kind of aristocratic, upper crust, like wealthy dude. He's played by Anthony Steffen, which is not that dude's real name, but that was, you know, the name that he went under a lot. He's kind of an Italian-Brazilian actor. He probably most recognizable, he was in a shit ton of spaghetti westerns, but he was also in a bunch of kind of giallo and horror movies as well. I knew him from Killer Fish, which I actually saw in Mystery Science Theater, which was kind of like a crime sort of thing. So I knew him from that, but I haven't seen any of the other like spaghetti westerns that he was in, but he was in like a shit ton, because if you go to like his IMDb page, it's just like there's like two or three columns of stuff that he was in. But so he plays the main character, Alan Cunningham, and at the beginning, he's kind of like, I don't really know, like, because at the beginning, the first scene is like somebody like escaping or something from like a mental hospital. We're presuming it's supposed to be him, but I don't really know like what the timeline is on it. It doesn't really matter. But so what ends up happening with Alan is that his wife, Evelyn, she was a redhead, which is a big part of the plot. She died, I believe, in childbirth. I think it was like a year prior to the events of the movie. He didn't take it too well, mainly because he keeps having these like dreamy, nakedy sequences where his wife is like running naked out into the gardens and it's like, you know, having sex with this other dude. You're never really sure, I don't think, like whether that actually happened or not, or whether he was like imagining it, because he's not real in his right mind, or it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like left ambiguous over whether he's in his right mind or not. So we don't really know. But so she died in childbirth, and he's you know, kind of went batshit afterwards, was put in a mental asylum, but he's out now. Now, interestingly, I guess because his wife is dead and either she really was cheating on him or he thought that she was, he has decided to punish her. It's really strange, like the relationship that he has, because it's almost kind of like he misses her and he's obsessed with her and he wants her back. But then in a lot of ways, it seems like he's trying to get back at her even though she's dead. And the way that he's doing this, gotta say, not a real psychologically healthy way to go about this. What he's doing is he goes and picks up redheaded women, usually like sex workers, strippers, that type of thing. So like I said, this is very sleazy. I mean, it's not sleazy as like some that I've seen, but it's pretty sleazy. There's a lot of nudity. There's some S&M. There's some stuff like that. So if that's like pinging all your radar, it's like, then definitely check this one out, because there's a lot of that shit in there. So he'll go and pick up like redheaded strippers that kind of resemble Evelyn, his wife, and will take them back to his manor house or his castle or whatever it is, where he has a really nice little Torquemada themed sort of, he's got a little Marquis de Sade action going on. He's got a big dungeon, right? And, you know, and he has a thing for like thigh high leather boots. And it's like, so the women come in there, he's like, hey, put these boots on. And then he starts whipping them, at which point they're kind of like, okay, yeah, this isn't really fun anymore. And then he kills him. So, you know, but since he's like a rich dude, he kind of gets away with it. It's just very strange. This movie is just very, very strange. So he kind of gets away with it, because it seems like no one, they're like, well, you know, he's a rich dude and that's gonna happen sometimes. And, you know, he's got some stuff to deal with. So we'll just like let him do his thing, I guess. It's always kind of like that sort of attitude. So he brings a couple of women in succession back to his dungeon, you know, puts on his robes and whips them and puts them across the thing, and they're all running around naked, and, you know, he ends up killing them. And something that happens too is that I guess that his dead wife, Evelyn, has this brother named Albert, who still works on the grounds. I don't know if he's like a gardener or something like that, or he just like, you know, looks after the grounds. So he still lives and works on the grounds, but he knows that Alan is bringing women back to the castle and killing them. And it's not like Alan is just kind of like, oh, bringing the women back and is like, oh my God, I'm freaking out, and then he kills them. He's planning this shit because he has this whole thing where he has like fake license plates that just like snap over the ones on his car, and he can just like, you know, whip them off. And so he's like, you know, he's very calculating in that way. It's not kind of a thing where he goes into a rage or anything. So don't even get that idea. But so the brother, Evelyn's brother, knows that he's killing people because he essentially like spies on him. So he uses this knowledge to basically blackmail him. In, I think the first time I watched this, because I've seen this like two or three times, the first time I watched this, I laughed really hard because Albert basically comes to him and he's like, yeah, I saw what you were doing with, you know, that other redhead or whatever. And, you know, Alan's like, yeah, what do you want this time? And he just says, I need 30 pounds. And I'm like, you just saw a dude murder somebody. And that's all you're asking for is 30 pounds, like to not like rat about to the police. And I called him, I wrote a blog post about this a long time ago. I was like, Albert is like the budget blackmailer. I was like, oh, that seems very reasonable. Here you go. Go buy yourself a pair of Levi's. I don't know. It was just like very, very funny to me. So yeah. So all of that's going on. And also, Alan has a cousin. I think it's his cousin, whose name is George. And George, I guess because everybody sort of knows, there's this there's this scene near the beginning where Alan brings in a psychic, and they have like a seance in the castle, which, like I said, that's one of the things that I really like about this, is kind of all the gothic trappings. There's like all this, there's like a family crypt and there's seances and all this. So I love that kind of shit, you know, and ghosts and whatnot. I like that. And I like that they kind of like crossbred the giallo with this sort of like old school gothic Hammer, you know, Mario Bava type of sensibility. I just thought that was like really cool. It really just, I don't know. I just really got into that. So they have this seance. Evelyn's ghost seems to appear. Alan flips out. His cousin George is basically like, man, you know, you're losing your mind again. Maybe I should move in and like take care of you. But George's solution, and it's like, I should say too, that Alan also has like a psychiatrist or something like that, that's like kind of looking after him. And both of them seem to think, they're like, well, probably what you should do to stop you from murdering all these hookers, because it seems like everyone just knows and everyone's just like, oh, Alan, that's how he's dealing with his trauma. He's just going out picking up prostitutes and killing them. And it's like, no one is really all that upset about it. It's just so strange. So yeah, so the psychiatrist and the cousin George are basically like, okay, well, you need to get out and party and like get into another relationship, because if you find a woman that sort of looks like Evelyn or reminds you of Evelyn and you marry her, then suddenly magically you won't want to kill people anymore because reasons. So I don't know. Like I said, it's just, but just let it wash over you. It doesn't make any sense. It's fine. And, you know, I should note too that our main character, who we're supposed to be kind of, I don't know if you're supposed to be like rooting for him, but he is like the protagonist. And, you know, the way things go later on, like as the mystery develops, you are kind of like, I guess you're kind of supposed to sympathize with him because you kind of feel like he's a victim at some point. But I'm like, what you have to think though is that he's essentially a serial killer. I mean, he's picking up random women in bars and bringing them back to his sex dungeon and then killing them. So, you know, that's not good. But it's just funny how blasé everyone is about it. So basically, you know, George is kind of like this swinging, you know, early 70s, whatever, like with some terrifying clothes, I must say. But there's this big party. Like, George takes Alan to this big party. And at this party, Alan meets Gladys. Now, Gladys, it's weird because I'm like reading the Wikipedia synopsis and they're saying, okay, well, he sees Gladys and he's immediately like, whoa, you know, that's her. You know, it's kind of this whole love at first sight thing. And the Wikipedia thing says she's a blonde, which I guess she is. She doesn't look as redheaded as the other women, but her hair is kind of more strawberry blonde. So I didn't really know if they were getting at she was supposed to look different than Evelyn, or if, because she was redheaded enough to make me think that maybe she was supposed to look like, I don't know. It's like, I'm thinking about things too much, but that's kind of like what I do, I guess. So he meets this woman, Gladys, and she is played by Marina Malfatti, who was in a bunch of giallo movies. Like I said, if you've seen any number of giallo movies, you will see the same actors like popping up again and again, because a lot of them were, you know, across a lot of genres, they were in a lot of different ones. She was also in The Red Queen Kills 7 times, you know, this same director's other movie. She was in All the Colors of the Dark, which again, I need to get around to because I really like that movie. She was in 7 Bloodstained Orchids, which is also pretty good. So, you know, so if you've seen some giallo movies, you'll recognize her. So basically he meets her and decides that she is the one. Really, I think like they meet that night and I don't even remember if it's like that night or like the next morning. Basically, he's like, hey, why don't you marry me? And at first she's like, yeah, you're crazy or whatever. But then she thinks about it. She's like, oh, you know what? Okay. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like this immediate, okay. So they end up getting married like pretty much immediately, which is like really funny. So I guess, like I said, he's marrying her. Like he does really seem to like, oh my God, she's the one, I met her. This is all magical and everything. But it's also kind of like, he's taking the advice of like his doctor and his cousin and stuff. Hey, you need to marry somebody, so you can stop all the serial killing. So there's that, going on too. So Gladys, who is now Lady Cunningham, moves into the castle, and this is very weird. Okay, so we have Evelyn's brother, Albert, who still lives on the property. There's also this other woman, this disabled woman, who I think is, I just can't remember if she's Evelyn's aunt or if she's Alan's aunt, but she kind of works there too. And then there's also, they have like a bunch, like a bunch of maids. And they all have like maid uniforms, which is not weird, but part of their uniforms is like these weird blonde, like sort of afro-y wigs. I'm not really sure, and they don't really explain it. Maybe it's because he gets triggered by redheads, so they just put these same wigs on all the maids so that he wouldn't like look at them and be like, oh my God, it's Evelyn, blah, you know what I mean? So maybe that's what it was, but it was just funny that it wasn't, so there's this big line of maids and they all had they all had the same wig on, and I was like, okay, whatever. So Gladys moves into the house, into this weird ass situation, you know, and I think there's something to do with like some stolen cutlery or something. I don't know what it is, but yeah, because I just remember that little detail. I don't even know if it has anything to do with anything. So Gladys comes in, and the other family members that live there are like really kind of shitty to her. And as time goes on, Alan still has, and here's like kind of another gothic trope that they use quite extensively in this movie, is that Alan still has a portrait of his, you know, dead wife, Evelyn, and, you know, and he's kind of haunted by it. Now, Gladys also starts getting haunted by it, and she starts to get obsessed with, you know, she thinks that she sees Evelyn a few times, like, you know, the ghost of her, like, at the window. She gets obsessed with going and looking in the crypt, and it's like, Alan doesn't want her to go in there, and she's like, what the fuck is going on in there? And it's just kind of like this whole thing where, for a long time, like, in the middle part of the movie, you're not actually really sure if Evelyn didn't really die, or if she actually is a ghost and is haunting the shit, or if somebody else is trying to make them think that Evelyn is still alive or haunting the shit. So it's kind of like, so it's a very, very gothic, like convoluted sort of narrative. Now, as time goes on, people start turning up dead. So Albert turns up dead. The disabled aunt, who I'm pretty sure is Alan's aunt, she ends up getting killed by, there's like a big pen of one of them like raises foxes, and she basically gets dumped in there and the foxes eat her, which is nice. And you know what I mean? So all these people are like turning up dead. And then Alan sees what appears to be Evelyn. Like, it's got her little outfit on that she was wearing in all his like naked dreams about her, but she has like, it's almost kind of like a skull face and like skull hands, and she's like beckoning to him and stuff, and he just like totally wigs. So then since he like really wigs out this time, they end up having to take him back to the sanitarium. Now, after that happens, and like I said, from this point forward, I'm going to spoil it a little bit because the end of it just goes so bonkers. It's one of those endings where it's like, oh, here's a twist, you know, a Scooby-Doo twist or whatever. And then you're like, oh, okay, fair enough. And then there's, oh, here's another twist. Oh, but wait, and then that's not all. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's like a double cross and a triple cross. And it's like, so there's all this crazy shit going on. So he gets sent off to the institution, at which point it is revealed that Gladys, the new wife, Lady Cunningham, and George, the cousin, are basically like, woot, we pulled it off, bro, because their whole thing was they were trying to make Alan go crazy again by making him think that Evelyn was still alive or was haunting him, motive being that George was Alan's only living male relative. So if something happened to Alan, like if Alan like went doolally and like where, or he died or whatever, then George would get his entire estate. So, you know, that's a pretty good motive right there. And then Gladys was kind of helping him out. So she was actually, you know, when George took Alan to the party where he met Gladys, that was kind of all a setup, right? So there was that whole thing going on. Now, it supposedly, like at first, you're led to believe that George was the one dressing up as Evelyn, like showing up like by the windows and being like, hey, I'm a ghost or whatever. But it turns out later that it actually wasn't George. It was this other redheaded woman named Susan who you were led to believe Alan had killed. Like, because remember I said at the beginning, like Alan was like totally a serial killer and then he was like bringing all these redheaded strippers and stuff like back to his sex dungeon and killing them. So one of the women that he brought back was named Susan, who George had kind of like introduced him or set him up with. And you're kind of led to believe that she was killed, but she actually got away. So she's been the one that was impersonating Evelyn this whole time. So like dressing up as a ghost and like wandering around and shit like that. So after that happens, then it turns out that George and Susan were working together. And then they're like, oh, well, now we're going to rub out Gladys, the wife. So they poison her. So then there's like a fight, like they poison some champagne, like they're where they're all celebrating, like how what a good job they did, like driving Alan back into the insane asylum. So they're like, woo, we did it. And they're just like, no, now we're going to poison her. And then Gladys and Susan start fighting. And then Gladys kills Susan. But then Gladys is like, she stabs her, I think. And then like Gladys ends up dying from the poison. So then George is just like, oh, well, that worked out better than it could have been expected. Now I'm the old last one standing that was like in on the plot. So you think, oh, okay, well, the cousin George was behind the whole thing, which, like I said, not crazy because he actually did have motive for getting rid of Alan because he stood to inherit all his money and his property and stuff. But then it turns out in yet another twist that actually Alan and his doctor psychiatrist friend, whose name is Dr. Timberlane, were actually had sort of engineered everything from the beginning to make the conspirators think that they were driving Alan crazy so he's supposed to like act crazy so that the conspirators would like show their ass. So there was that whole thing. So Alan, who I will remind you once again, is a serial killer, and his psychiatrist, who basically knows he's a serial killer and is basically like, hey, that's how everyone's got to work through trauma in their own way type of thing. You know, he doesn't say that, but that's kind of what the implication is. So the two of them, you're supposed to like be happy that it's like, oh, Alan, he was the victim of like this supposed conspiracy, but really he was the one that was behind it all along and he was just trying to draw them out to get them into trouble because they were trying to take all his money away, even though, again, he's a serial killer. So like I said, this is a very, very weird sort of movie. So as it ends up, since Alan had faked, you know, his nervous breakdown to lure everybody out, you know, and when this is all revealed, like I said, in yet another Scooby-Doo moment, George tries to run away and then somehow accidentally, a big like bag of sulfur or something like falls into the pool. And then George falls into the pool and like acid sort of eats part of his skin off or whatever. And so George kind of gets carried off and that's, you know, that's the end of the movie. They just end roll credits. So everybody in this movie, and like I said, I think this was probably the main criticism of this movie I saw, just like even people that are like really into giallo movies, every single person in this movie is terrible. That did not bother me. So I don't really know if like the whole point of the movie is like, oh yay, like Alan won because all these people were conspiring against him. But like I said, he's still a killer. I mean, he did, even though Susan, who was the second redhead that you saw, like him bringing him back to the sex dungeon, and even though she did live, the first woman that he brings back, he picks her up, he takes her in the car, he changes out the license plates, it takes her back, and he essentially killed her. He's a murderer. So I'm not really sure like why, like if we're supposed to see him as a good guy, because nobody is a good guy. And like I said, his psychiatrist, far as I know, doesn't kill anybody, but he totally knows, he seems to know that Alan is a murderer and is not really doing anything about it. But like I said, I guess because Alan is a lord and he has a shit ton of money, I guess he can just do whatever he wants with total impunity, which I guess is sort of realistic, but you know. So yeah, there's that whole thing. So, like I said, this was one of only two Giallo movies. Not the only movies, but the only two Giallo movies that Emilio Miraglia made. And he also made Red Queen Kill Seven Times, which a lot of people have mentioned was a lot better than this one. The story is kind of the same, but a lot of people said that one was better, just better directed, whatever. I can't really speak to that because I haven't seen it. I actually really have a lot of affection for this movie. I like the fact that it goes in sort of like a traditional giallo direction toward the end, where it's just kind of like there's all these red herrings and it's like all this big conspiracy and everything. It's not so much giallo in the sense that, you know, oh, there's like a black cloaked figure with black gloves and he's stabbing women, or it's not really like that. It's more, it leans more toward the gothic. It leans more toward, you know, something like maybe Mario Bava would have made. This obviously isn't as great as a Mario Bava movie, but it's in that sort of line. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, you know, like Black Sabbath or something like that. It was that kind of look to it. The cinematography is quite nice. I like the score a lot. But when this came out in Italy, it was actually like a pretty good, not a huge hit or anything, but it was like pretty successful. It got released in the US later, like a year later. Some parts of it, like I said, there's been some parts of it like cut out because, as I said, this is fairly sleazy. There's a lot of nudity, particularly in the beginning part of the movie. There's a lot of S&M type stuff, you know, women being chained up and, you know, whipped and stuff like that. So, you know, lots of boobies. If you're into that kind of thing, then, you know, the first part of this movie, there's a lot of it. I will note, too, that when this was released in the United States, one, the poster that's for it, as much as I love the poster for this, which, if you haven't seen it, it's kind of like, it's a woman in the background, like, in a kind of white nightgown type of thing, but she has, like, a skull head, and she has red hair, and then she's, like, holding, like, a severed head. That doesn't really have anything to do other than, you know, maybe, I guess it's kind of like woman in a nightgown with red hair that's sort of like skull-y looking, but no one gets decapitated or anything like that. But it's like, you know what I mean? So I kind of feel like when it was released over here, they didn't really know how best to market it. And I'm not really sure why that is, because it's not like they were, you know, new to marketing these types of movies to an American audience. One of the things that comes up a lot when people are talking about this movie is that when it was released in the US, when you went to see it in the theater, like when they released it in theaters, one of the gimmicks was they had like red dyed popcorn. Like you buy red dyed popcorn that's called blood corn because they couldn't think of a better name than that, I guess. But yeah, so it was a very kind of like, you know, was that guy that did, William Castle, is that who I'm thinking of? Who did, like, all the Emergo and all that kind of stuff. It was very much that kind of stuff. It was just, like, these kind of gimmicky kind of shit when it came out. But, like I said, if you like giallo movies, this is not a straight-up giallo movie. It does have some elements of that, you know, with kind of, like, over-the-top kills. There is some kind of, it's weird because it's kind of a weird juxtaposition between, like, very, like, gothic type of story, you know, in the classic sense of the word. And then it has some stuff where it's just kind of like, you know, super mod type stuff, which I think a lot of the 70s giallo movies had, where they had these kind of like ultra modern interiors and everybody had like up to the minute fashions and that kind of stuff. So there is a little bit an aspect of that, but overall, it has a very gothic tone to it. Everything's like creepy cemeteries, like a creepy old crumbling castle, like, and you know, in a crypt and ghosts and seances and that kind of stuff. So it's just an interesting kind of like middle ground between those two genres, I suppose, even though it leans a lot more heavily into the gothic. But yeah, so as I mentioned, there's a lot of different edits of this floating around, although as far as I know, the sort of definitive one is the 103-minute version. I watched this on Tubi, and I'm pretty sure that that's not cut, but I'd have to go back and look at the runtime because I'm not entirely sure. You know, but it is on Tubi if you want to watch it for free. I'm sure it's on other streaming platforms as well. And as I mentioned earlier, Emilio Miraglia, who directed this and who also directed The Red Queen Kills Seven Times, which, like I said, I will get around to eventually, those two movies were actually released on a kind of a Blu-ray combo called Killer Dames. That's what it was called. Not Dangerous Dames. It was called Killer Dames. And that came out back in 2016. And I don't have that, but I've heard that like the print on this movie in particular is actually really looks really, really nice. Like I said, the cinematography in this is actually quite cool. And I really like all the sort of gothic elements to it because, you know, I'm into that kind of thing. But yeah, so as I said, if you're into giallo movies or if you're into like gothic Italian horror, you might dig it. It's kind of sleazy. It's probably about 10, 15 minutes longer than it really needed to be because there's some parts that kind of drag on a little bit. But overall, I actually quite enjoy this one, even though everyone in it is just dastardly and there's like no one to root for. But I don't know, something about it, I just really like the vibe of it. It's kind of a divisive, you know, among fans of Italian horror in general. So let me know if you've seen it. Let me know if you saw it, what'd you think about it? And we can talk about it in the comments if you would like to. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.